Good afternoon, ma'am, and tell us your name, tell us your qualifications, just general introduction of yourself, but also just to let you know that we've done qualifications check as well as security check. If there is something that you think of, you can then just tell us if there is something that we need to know. But if there is nothing, as we don't have anything for you around that area. So the floor is yours. You'll be sharing 5 minutes with the members. When we start questions, understand that you do everything with the member in 5 minutes. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity that has been afforded to me. My name is Nomonde Gongaka Siopa. I recently qualified with a master's degree in ICT Policy and Regulations from the University of Witwatersrand. In terms of a bit of background about me, I possess almost over 25 years experience within the media fraternity, having started in front of the cameras, worked my way behind the scenes, worked as a producer. When we look at the objects of the Act, it talks about the three tiers of the broadcasting landscape. And I've had an opportunity to serve within those three tiers, the three tiers being public, commercial, and community. I've had an opportunity to spend close to 10 years working for the SABC. Entry point, I worked there for SABC 1 as the programming manager for the channel, responsible for all the content that is broadcast on SABC 1, responsible also for the scheduling of the content that gets broadcasted, but also responsible for ensuring that the compliance reports that go to ICASA in terms of their mandate and all the statutory requirements that are required of us as a public broadcaster at the time. I was also able to serve within the board of the MDDA. Within the MDDA, I had a chance to chair the Finance and Operations Committee. And during my tenure there at MDDA, we had three successful years of clean, unqualified audits. Within the MDDA, I also served within the Regulatory and Policy Subcommittee. And during my tenure, we started what we call media literacy awareness campaigns, which were campaigns which were at grassroots level, where we empowered young learners within schools, capacitating them with the tools of how they can become responsible media content generators. We taught them how to compile content, be it for print, radio, or even television. But also it was more about making sure that they are media literate and that they also utilize the community radio stations that are within their areas, and they become the content generators of that particular medium. The last part of the three tier, the third tier, is commercial. I also had an opportunity to work for MultiChoice Africa, but I worked within the Africa division of the organization as head of Africa Regulatory and Stakeholder Management. There also I worked within the policy and regulatory space. Across the continent, I worked with a number of regulatory bodies, parliamentarians within those respective countries, competition bodies, and I was also responsible for the actual stakeholder engagement with our respective partners that we worked with. I worked with industry bodies across the continent and a number of broadcasters as well. And also, what was critical about that role as well was to also forge strategic partnerships with those that we worked with at the time.
Okay. Thank you very much. I will donate our 1 minute that is left to one of the members. Remember, we are sharing 5 minutes. Can I start with Honorable Madisha?
Molot.
Molot at Madisha.
Okay. You spoke about, as you went on, multi-choice. And before I come to the questions that I have here. Now, given the point that you have raised about multi-choice, do you think that ICASA should consider interventions to break multi-choice dominance in our pay television industry? And if so, why?
I think with the matter of multi-choice is that the organization has been around for the past 30 years. And I think previously ICASA did try to issue 5 other licenses to other operators. However, unfortunately, one of them dropped out, withdrew the application, which was ESET at the time, and 4 stuck around, and we had Top TV, which stood around, but it has been tough time for Top TV. And recently I picked up an initiative that has been undertaken. At first it was a joint collaboration between ICASA, the Competition Commission, and the National Consumer Commission. The main issue here at hand is to understand why is it that multi-choice continues to be a dominant player, to be a monopoly within the industry. The role of the regulator, amongst others, is to ensure that there's fair competition within the industry. And this particular inquiry, which is underway, which is basically looking into the subscription model, pay television, why is it that we still only have multi-choice, also being the only single player? And I think the route that ICASA is currently taking, I am very comfortable with it, because what they are out to get there, the question they are saying is that we are out there to make sure that we undertake an inquiry to understand why is it that even though we tried to intervene as a regulator, things did not happen. So what they are doing now is to understand, to say, do a market intelligence inquiry to understand why is it that in spite of the interventions that as the regulator they've put in place, why things did not happen accordingly. And based on the findings of that market study, we can then be able to, the regulator can then be able to take a decisive way informed by those findings in terms of how they deal with the current situation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My next question is, ICASA is responsible for regulating telecommunications industry in the public interest and to ensure affordable services for all the South African people. Now, are our telecommunication services affordable and globally competitive? And if not, what mechanisms can ICASA apply to achieve these goals? So if you go in, what are you going to do?
Late last year, if I'm not mistaken, we saw a big campaign called Fees, almost like the Fees Must Fall campaign. And subsequent to that, there was another campaign which South Africa as a public was trying to undertake, which is called Data Must Fall. Recently, South Africa hosted the World Economic Forum. And out of the World Economic Forum, one of the undertakings that were taken going forward was that we need to make sure that there's internet for all. However, as a country, we can never achieve internet for all when there are barriers to entry of ensuring that our people have that access to participating. For starters, there's issues of, when you're talking about barriers, what are those barriers? It could be a barrier from a device perspective, because without a device, you cannot participate in the internet economy. Secondly, the issue of data. One of the key objects of the Competition Commission, which they say is that they want to understand, they're also going to do a benchmark study looking at other countries where some of our South African operators are operating, to understand how they are charging them. And based on some of the reports that one has read, one has understood that in countries like Kenya, countries like Zambia, where some of our operators are currently operating, actually the cost of data is much lesser than South Africa. And the question is, why is that? You know, so we are hoping that out of this inquiry, which is currently also being undertaken by ICASA, I think they're going to conclude the study by end of March next year. we'll be able to understand why is it that the cost to communicate is so expensive. And you must understand that technology is an enabler, and unless we are able to have access to it and use it, then a lot of us are going to be left out. As a parent to teenagers, I almost like have an inkling and understanding what this data thing means.
Thank you very much. I think the last minute that the chairperson has given me, let me put this last question. That given the fact that ICASA is responsible for regulating the telecommunications, broadcasting, and postal industries in the public interest, and to ensure affordable services of a high quality for all South Africans. What, in your opinion, does the term, in quote, in the public interest mean? I see this, I actually just suppose that to what you have been raising. You have been saying public broadcast. Public broadcast. I think you raised that on a number of occasions. Now, that vis-a-vis the issue of public interest, what would you say? Thank you, Chairperson.
You can respond, and then after that, it will be honorable said.
I think also remembering the history of our country, of where we're coming from, that there are past imbalances that we have to redress. And when South Africa attained her democracy, we had to make sure that, how do we make sure that our people also enjoy the joys of the democracy that we have? Hence, the operative word being in the public interest. We're putting public first. And if you look at the reform of regulations or policy in this country, earlier on, we spoke about universal service obligations. And that is also in line of ensuring that our people have got access to the services, they've got access to information, they've got access to telcos and their use. That is why earlier on, when you look at the universal service obligations at the time, one of the key obligations that had been put on telecom operators was to make sure that telephony must be rolled out across the country. And I remember those who come from the township will remember that there used to be those containers in the corners. At the time I was young, I didn't understand why we had those containers. But that was one of the obligations, to make sure that we have access to telephony. Now, in the 21st century, where we are in the cusp of what we've termed the fourth industrial revolution, those universal service obligations, they almost have got to be reviewed. And why do I say that? Because we have now moved beyond voice. We are sitting within data. What we should be saying now is that when you're talking public interest, how do our people enjoy the digital landscape that we are living in today?
Of course. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Number one, what do you understand to be the role of the president vis-a-vis that of the minister in the appointment of councillors, officers?
Thank you, Honorable Teddy. I carry with me this book, which I call my Bible. It's a combo, so it sort of like talks to the Broadcasting Act, it talks to the Electronic Communications Act, and in that book, it clearly outlines the delineation of function. So where the appointment of the ICASA Council, how I understand the process is that first it becomes a public process where there are nominations, and once the nomination has been done, the matter comes here to Parliament. And once it has been...
Hang on a moment. Otherwise, we won't finish.
Okay.
I want you to go straight to the role of the president vis-a-vis that of the minister.
So
not the whole process, otherwise we won't finish.
So in terms of my understanding of the processes is that once Parliament has made recommendations, they've done all they could, then they send, is it 1.5 per names, to the minister to make a decision in terms of these are the names, these are the people whom we think should serve within the council. And once the minister has satisfied him or herself with the names that has been suggested, then the minister can then make those appointments. That is how I understand it, as it's written in the Act, according to how the appointment of councillors are actually undertaken.
I also spoke about the president. I didn't pick it up.
So in this book, I can open it. I do not recall seeing, I think, the president being mentioned in terms of the process of appointment of the ICASA councillors.
The ICASA Act, surely you have, as you have indicated, you have gone through that book. Are there some gaps that you think need to be looked at very, very closely by Parliament to ensure that councillors are able to effectively do the work that they're supposed to be doing?
I think a lot of work went into great detail when we moved away from the IBA and the SATRA and the amalgamation, and we formed ICASA, because a lot of blind spots that had not been seen at the time were factored in and were considered when you're looking at the Electronic Communications Act. The roles and the functions of the councillors, the operations of the ICASA itself, they are clearly spelled out here, you know, within the Act. So maybe, if anything, things were to be reconsidered would be actually how we capacitate ICASA, you know, how we fund ICASA, because for it to be able to deliver on its mandate, a lot hinges on how it is financed and how it is also capacitated.
Surely you are aware that we have missed the deadline with regard to digital migration. Can you advise the minister on how best can we fast track this particular process?
You know, the digital migration program, I remember way back when we started, when we launched the pilot, it was November 2008. And a lot has happened since then. From a technology perspective, technology has morphed. Other countries are now delivering this digital migration via IGTV, and we're still talking set-top boxes. My advice to the minister, who seems to have come on board and hit the ground rolling, is that can we please bring integrity into this process and make sure that this process is finally finalized and completed. I know that recently she's appointed an advisory committee to advise her in terms of how we actually roll out. So I think for me, South Africa is ready. Let us hold hands together and make sure that this process is finally implemented. As South Africa, we started way before other countries, but we have countries like Rwanda who have switched off. We have countries like Mauritius who have switched off. Kenya has switched off. But what have we done in South Africa?
The very last one. Let me come to the, just switch it off. The from compliance point of view, do you think ICASA has got enough teeth to bite?
From a compliance perspective, it depends which area you're talking to. I was looking at the annual report for ICASA, I think it's 2016, 2017, if I'm not mistaken, where they were even very thin on councillors. But when you look at the amount of work that was done, from a technology perspective, looking at issues of spectrum, reviews of certain research components, a lot was done. So for me, I was looking at, you know, even though they were thinly capacitated, they were able to push so much more. But you ask yourself, you know, the because against that, I also looked at the staff complement. During that period, ICASA lost about 33 employees. And that's a high turnover for any organization. However, that annual report doesn't tell us where we lost the people. With these critical skills that were needed, or with these non-core skills that were needed, I'm not quite sure. But for me, as I'm sitting here, with very minimalistic resources at the top, which means that these councillors put on their boots and in spite, against all odds, did whatever they needed to do, rolled up their sleeves and worked on behalf of South Africa.
No, thanks, Chair.
Al-Bashir.
Thank you, Chair. What in this age of communications technologies convergence, what relevance is a public broadcaster? How would you define it? Do you think it should be amended in any way, the role of a public broadcaster? Then ICASA itself, you've alluded to some of the problems here with the resources. Why do you think ICASA has been under-resourced, and what would you do as a councillor to address the resourcing problems and the management problems of ICASA? What specific skills, you've very much focused on the broadcasting area of their responsibilities. What do you think that ICASA should do differently to encourage diversity in broadcasting? And you currently are self-employed as a consultant. What kind of consulting do you do? Who are your clients? And having had such a strong employment record in both the SABC and MultiChoice, how would you see working to perhaps regulate them both and to perhaps minimize and diversify their markets?
Thank you, Honorable Shin. Your first question was the relevance of public broadcasting in the digital broadband era. For me, I always look at the mandate. What is the mandate of the public broadcaster? And for me, it does not matter whether it's pre, you know, digital era or post-digital era. I, living in South Africa, the public broadcaster is about ensuring that we have democracy. And how else can the narrative of democracy be told but by the public broadcaster? So for me, the question is, how do we then reposition public broadcasting so that it has relevance within this digital era? By making sure that the content that is being commissioned lives across all the other platforms that go beyond the normal way of how we receive transmission. Because when you look at the future of public broadcasting, for me to make sure that my children, 10, 15 years' time, will still be watching SABC, they will not be watching it from the normal television set. We've got to make sure that it's available in the platforms within which this new techno-digital youngsters are actually consuming into the future. So for me, the mandate remains solid. The mandate remains important and critical in making sure that we safeguard this democracy. Because from a licensing perspective, no one can carry the mandate unlike the SABC is doing, because it's not their core. There is no way that a commercial entity can actually put forward a public broadcast, a public mandate, because it's not their core function. There is no way that a commercial free-to-air would put the mandate of a public entity as its priority, because at the end of the day, they are about driving profits. They are about carrying the commercial imperative. So if this mandate doesn't work for them, they will just dump it and move on with their commercial imperative. So for me, it is important that this mandate is retained, that the SABC is strengthened, so that our public, the majority whom receive this content, solely rely on that SABC to get that content. So we've got to make sure that that content is key, is relevant, and it empowers our community. You also spoke about the question, if I got you correctly, the relevance of ICASA. I mean, I was asking myself the challenges that anyone having to regulate in this digital era, because things are moving so fast, you know, technology is morphing so fast. By the time we are done with issuing regulations, or by the time we are done with providing that policy direction, things would have moved. So for me, I always say, what is the backbone? Because if the backbone is solid, wherever the technology moves, you make sure that that mandate serves across whatever platforms that are available. So for me, the relevance of the regulator is still very, very crucial. For instance, the one thing that we know that we can never regulate is the internet. However, who is also bringing content via the internet? We now have your Netflix, we now have your Amazon television, we now have your Google. Who are bringing this content? as a regulator, the least we can do, because we know how to trace these people, it's not some dingy little startup whom we can never trace, but these big organizations we can be able to trace, and we can enforce that they do such in a responsible manner. So for me, regulation and responsible regulation is still very, very key. You spoke about why is ICASA under-resourced. I'm not sure that I sit in a comfortable chair to say why is ICASA under-resourced. But I think if a proper budget is allocated to ICASA, then they can resource themselves appropriately. As we speak right now, you know, this industry is technology heavy and technology driven. And the last I checked, ICASA had 4 core senior engineers. So is that sufficient to assist ICASA to deliver on its big, broader mandate that goes beyond broadcasting, that also has to serve the telcos, that also have to serve those who are operating within the internet space? So for me, I think if we really, really want to assist ICASA, we've got to make sure that appropriate funding is allocated towards ICASA so that, number one, they can employ the right people with the proper skills, and we can retain them. Because for me, when I looked at that, those 33 people who've resigned within 1 year, it really, really, you know, it was a cause for concern. If I understood you very well, is how...
You know, your 5 minutes is over.
I'm not the one taking up the time. If you could have more succinct answers, it might help. Thank you.
Do you hear that, Ms.?
I heard that, Honorable Matlakwan.
Yeah.
Okay. I take note. I will try to keep it short. Your last question, Honorable Shin, if you can just explain it a little bit, because I'm not quite sure if I understood it, my having worked with SABC and my having worked with MultiChoice.
That would then go to a conflict of interest, but I think we'll skip that one in favour of the other one. Who are your current clients, and what are you consulting on?
So I've been working as an independent researcher within the ICT space. I was roped in to work on a domain name, DNS, domain name study, which was commissioned by ICANN, which is a regulator for the internet. The main research question that was being asked there, which we had to answer as researchers, is that why is there low uptake on the domain names across the continent? You know, so that was one of the research that I undertook. On behalf of the South African Communications Forum, whom I do a lot of work with, I've just issued them with a desktop research on the fourth industrial revolution. What is it, and what impact does it have on us as a country, and operations going forward? I also just want to check the other projects, and I'm also finishing off via an organization called Pan Africa TNT. I have been brought on board. They've been commissioned by the Department of Communications to undertake a study to understand the impact of the broadcast digital migration awareness campaign, because they did start with the pilot, so they wanted to understand that when they roll over to the second phase, the awareness campaign, how effective was it, and if it was not effective, where should corrections be made and improved?
You can go back to the question that she didn't understand.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was just looking at your track record at SABC and MultiChoice, and how would you treat any regulatory issue about those? It would, say, take to break them all up into smaller entities. Where would your loyalties lie?
I think my loyalties, without a shadow of the doubt, will lie with South Africa. The Act is very clear that when they appoint a councillor, they want someone who will have integrity, transparency, fairness, and who uphold what is enshrined in the Constitution. And for me, that is what drives me. I come from a background of developmental communications, and that is precisely about developing the people, making sure that one adds value vis-a-vis individual personal interests. So for me, country South Africa would come first vis-a-vis all the entities that I've worked for. Thank you.
Yes, we'll go to Honorable Ndlozi and then Honorable Kungubele will finish up and then we'll break for lunch after that.
Is this normal? I am a fan of your work at Yizo. Yizo. I just wanted to say that, I mean, there hasn't been a drama yet in South Africa. It was a great project. Anyway, my line of questioning is going to be a little bit tough because I want to question your personality, because I think the people who are to be at the helm of ICASA ought to have tough personalities and strong personalities because of the regulatory space. There's a lot of lobbying that goes on from capital and government. It's going to be a bit tough. So you were in the SABC from 2008 to 2014, correct? The CV says 2014. From 2008 to 2014 as a group public affairs manager.
So my first entry point to the SABC was in 2005, SABC One, Programming Project Manager. I subsequently went to...
I'm interested in this public affairs manager.
Okay.
What was it between 2008 to 2014?
Yeah.
Who was the appointing authority? Who appointed you? And who are you reporting to?
So when I got employed at SABC Group Public Affairs, it was a former councillor, Miki Ndlovu. At the time, she was with us, and then she subsequently moved across to ICASA. And after she left, and then there were a number of actors there, I then reported to a lady called Ms. Moho Lekhwea, and she also, because there was a lot of acting positions there, and then I subsequently reported to the late Mr. Mohlolo Lephaka, until I left the SABC.
Okay, so what I'm driving at is the havoc which was at the SABC at the time, and it would mean you were at the forefront of the designing a PR project to the SABC at the time. So, I mean, I want to know your involvement in defending in the entire public profile or public or PR campaign in the years of Saudi Mutsuni.
Honorable
and Ndlovu. All the related controversies.
Honorable Ndlozi, when I joined the SABC, I signed a contract with clear deliverables. So my stance has always been, whether it's a Mr. Mutsuning era, whether it's a Mr. Sorenso era, or whoever's era, that should never deter me from...
Let me help you remember. I'm probing your capacity to stand for what is right, even if you may lose your job. This is an important era in which a lot of people challenged what was happening in the SABC to the expense of their jobs, personal income, and families. What did you do?
Fortunately for me, maybe through my conduct and what I stand for and being always clear about what I believe in, there has never been a position where I felt that somebody wanted to impose certain things which were untoward, you know, where I was supposed to do things that were never supposed to be done. I have had a situation outside the SABC where I had a boss who told me to do something which was not above board, and I was very, very honest, and I said, unfortunately, this is not in line with what I've been brought here to do. So, unfortunately,
but there was a lot of injustice in the SABC. Is it not an obligation when you see an injustice somewhere to stand up for it, even if it doesn't affect you personally?
Can I tell you what the challenge was at the time when I was there? Is that you almost like operated at autopilot. You had a manager, but you had no manager. Where you would go to a manager and say, I have drafted this. Please engage with this document so that you can give input. And they say, I trust you, run with it. So that was my frustration. But one had to trust one's gut by going to other people that you trust to engage with this document, to make sure that it's authentic and it will contribute meaningfully. So for me, that was my major frustration, to say, yeah, you have leadership, but this leadership cannot even lead you. So for me, that is where the frustration is.
So one of the big things that came out of the report, the commission report around the SABC with this error, is a lot of manipulation of news to the marginalization of the opposition and all those things, but also to directing instructions to some of the journalists in the SABC. Were you aware at the time, and what was your position?
At the time, even though I was in public affairs, I had an opportunity to work with a number of internal stakeholders. And at the time, from a newsroom, I didn't pick up any sense of, you know, that talk down, because, I mean, yes, things were happening, but I don't think that there was that kind of heavy-handedness. And if it was there, maybe I was not aware of. But, I mean, for me, I took my hat off for that SABC age, for standing up, because you can imagine, you know, swimming against the tide, you know, standing up against what which is viewed as power, and leave people like those. And
okay. The last series of questions have to do with your role in MultiChoice. It says here you were head of African Regulatory Stakeholders Management. Were you reinforcing Kuos Becker's monopoly in the continent?
In fact, I need to state it categorically that MultiChoice only enjoys the successes it's enjoying only in South Africa. Across the continent, competition is very stiff. There will be probably 3-4 other players that they have got to contend.
Yeah, but were you going to make sure that this monopoly in South Africa must find expression in the continent? Was that your job? Maybe yes or no.
You know, I can't answer yes or no, because for me, I have been one of those people who had been following Mr. Kuos Becker like a hawk, because I've always called him a visionary. Till today, we call him the father of broadcasting. Out of his research thesis, he was able to give birth to subscription television, not only in South Africa, but he took it across the continent. I had a mandate to make sure that we, from a regulatory perspective, across the continent, we comply, we make sure that our licenses...
So as an admirer of Kuos Becker, who is a white monopoly capitalist in the pay television space, do you understand my difficulty why I would doubt why we should put you in the board? What's your reaction to that? Because that's one of the important things you're going to have to break, is this guy that you call a father.
Honorable Ndlozi, with your permission, for me, if there's anything that's untoward that Mr. Kuos Becker is found to be doing, from a regulatory perspective, I have got to do what is required of me, you know. So
no, it is a problem that he dominates the pay television space. I mean, he owns MultiChoice. So as a regulator, if your role is to transform the pay television space in South Africa, you have to break Kuos Becker. Agreed?
The role of the regulator from an economic perspective is to make sure that there is a fair market play across the industry, there is fair competition across the industry, and I'm happy with the current subscription inquiry that ICASA is undertaking, because it is realized that we cannot go on forever like this, having one player dominating the market. You know, Top TV has tried, but they haven't taken over.
I need you to redeem yourself here. The owner. Okay, let me ask you a direct question. Are there black owners or shareholders in MultiChoice?
I am not happy with the current ownership. There's what they've also launched, the ICT BBBEE, and it precisely talks to ownership that 24 years into a democracy...
No, MultiChoice. Are the black owners in MultiChoice? Or is it Kuos Becker alone?
I'm not sure if I'm happy with that Phuthumanathi share scheme, because I don't think it's a true empowerment, a vehicle in order to empower our people.
So now you are you are a councillor in ICASA. We appoint you. What are the first steps you are going to do to make sure that Kuos does the right, because you're saying you're not happy with it? What will you do from a regulatory point of view to make sure that you break it?
his monopoly?
Obviously, right now I'm sitting outside and having partially engaged with the ICT BBBEE, one has got to understand to say from a compliance legal perspective, how do we make sure that when we talk transformation, it is transformation in its truest sense, and it happens and it happens without delay. If that is my mandate, that shall be done.
Final question. Elections. ICASA allocates election slots in the SABC, so we are back to the public broadcaster. Well, majority of us in the opposition often criticize the criteria as reinforcing the already existing dominance of established political parties. What is your view in relation to whether it should change or not? So would you be vying to make sure that the allocations during elections in advertising in SABC TV and SABC radio change, and if they should change, how would you change them?
I think
surely that's the last question.
So for me, sitting at ICASA, I do not think that I'll have the muscle and the influence to change it, because it's something that's in the act. So if there's to be any change, it's got to be driven from Parliament to make sure that from a legislative perspective, those provisions are actually changed from that perspective.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed this. Honorable Kumubela.
I think a lot of work has been covered. I'm going to ask you one question in three. Your view on the role of ICASA on the following. The regulatory role with regard to ensuring ICT is a platform for increased access to government services. Two, your view on the ICASA's role in the regulatory space with regard to ensuring that the public broadcasting content is in all platforms. Lastly, your view on the ICASA's ruling as far as editorial policy impact of, as in as far as news coverage from the time of your being a group public affairs manager, 08 to 2014. And then those are the questions.
My views on ICASA ensuring that there is ICT access, especially of government services. I think the provisions are very clear from ensuring that there's universal service and universal access obligations that must be upheld and implemented by license holders. You know, so for me, earlier on,
evaluation of ICASA's performance in that area.
Honorable Mendo.
Of ICASA's performance. That's the essence of my questions. You know what ICASA is supposed to this point. What is your evaluation of their performance in that area?
When I revisit some of the work that has been done, also based on what has been tabled in the annual report, there's the whole issue of spectrum release. You know, and I think they have made a bit of work where that is concerned. However, there also is another department called the DTPS, which has now issued that white paper on ICT white paper, which speaks primarily to issues of spectrum. So now ICASA, I do not think that up until, I know that it's partially been implemented, up until a decision has been made from a policy perspective in terms of how that spectrum is going to be utilized, I do not think that right now ICASA will be able to move forward on issues of spectrum allocation and stuff like that. Because obviously even this digital migration is almost like holding back that issue of releasing the spectrum, because once we've migrated completely, then that spectrum is going to be made available, and only then can that spectrum be reallocated. Honorable Member.
Because of the public broadcasting content on platforms.
So for me, when we evaluate ICASA's performance in making sure that SABC delivers on its mandate, we know for a fact that from a local content production perspective, SABC has not met its obligation of procuring virgin content and
your ICASA's evaluation in performing that.
So for me, I think that ICASA might be aware that the SABC has not delivered in terms of from a compliance perspective, and I think they haven't done anything about it. And the question is why they're not doing anything about it is because they know that can we really shut the SABC down? And the question is, why is SABC not procuring new content? Is it because we don't have the money? Or maybe once upon a time, the SABC did have the money to procure that content, and they didn't deliver on it. So
remember, we talk evaluation. In analyzing their performance in that area, do you know of any memorable interventions they have made, struggled, failed, and so on? Because the reason I'm asking this question, if you go to the annual report of SABC, they accept, in the section on performance, they accept their poor performance in the digital area and so on and so on and so on, online stuff and so on.
I think there ICASA might have failed, you know, in terms of ensuring that there's compliance, there's delivery.
What would you do? How would you advise ICASA to deal with that?
For me, obviously, we have to do an introspection to find out where our Achilles heel is, and make sure that we improve on that area to say, if we're not monitoring, what is preventing us from monitoring and making sure that our licensees deliver as expected?
You know, editorial, this is my last issue. Evaluation of the ICASA's performance again, from the time you were these public managers, there has always been this debate about the biased public broadcasting institution, which is not actually mainly in the interest of public. ICASA's performance in that area, in the editorial policy.
I think my time at the SABC is when, from a content perspective, it had not collapsed. It was nearing, it was headed downwards. But, I mean, for me, the only saving grace was
characterized collapse.
So for me, the saving grace was having a platform called SABC Education, because for me, that is the one platform that has succeeded in making sure that it upholds the mandate of educating for starters, because they even segmented their work to public education, early childhood, the matric reload, and those kind of things. So for me, that was the one segment within the SABC that was actually able to deliver on the mandate. And then the rest, I mean, I had challenges with the commercial ones, because we have what we call the PCBS, the public commercial.
Was there a news bias between 2008 and 2014, I'm saying this from the editorial perspective and with the ICASA's role in mind.
So for me, I love factual content. So I was one that used to watch your what's this Thursday episode? I forget that. So it's those factual programs where they expose. They do investigative journalism, your special assignments. So for me, I was watching a lot of those, you know, those kind of programs.
Credit, they did their work during that period.
Maybe they could have done more, because for me, I'm talking about...
But you're not disappointed with that?
I am disappointed, because I'm talking from what I have consumed as an ordinary viewer when I go home, you know.
All right, no, that's fine. Thanks, Ms. Konak. I'll always call you Ms. Konak. I still have to get used to the other name. Members, I think, thank you very much for the responses, and we're done. Surely you know the process, most as to where it goes and to the point of appointing councillors.
Honourable Member, Dr. Maklangwane and all the rest of the members, I'd just like to thank you for affording me this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Members, we are going to...